So, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for being here today and giving me the opportunity to speak. As she said, I've been here for a few days. This is actually my first trip anywhere in Germany, any temple in Germany. Although I was with Prabhupada, I traveled with him for 2.5 years. I never came to Germany with Srila Prabhupada. The one time he came, I wasn't with him. So I've been eager to come to Germany. And now I live in England near Bhaktivedanta Manor. So traveling in Europe is very much easier than it was from America the last several years. And since we have so many here for the feast today, I was thinking what I should talk about. Because, as she said, Prabhupada is so wonderful. Prabhupada once said, when I was reading Krishna book and I was looking for a special story to read, and Prabhupada stopped me and he said, anywhere. He said, read anywhere. He said, Krishna is like a sweet ball. Everywhere you bite, it's sweet. You know? So Prabhupada is also like that. Whatever you describe about Srila Prabhupada is very sweet, but there's... everyone here, of course, is familiar with Srila Prabhupada and everything that he's done and still doing within this international society, this ISKCON society. So rather than spend too much time describing all the wonderful things that Prabhupada did to spread Krishna consciousness, as she said, we were trying to get a little more intimate details about Srila Prabhupada since I had that opportunity. And again, thinking what to talk about today, I decided to talk about prasadam, Srila Prabhupada and prasadam. And the reason I did that was because I've never been to a temple where the Sunday feast started with the feast. So I thought that you devotees really like prasadam. Because they just, you walk in the door and you eat prasadam. So, in most places you go, they make you hear some philosophy first, you know, and then you get to take prasadam. But what happens then is people come towards the end of the lecture anyway. So as the temple room gets more and more full, as you get closer to prasadam time, because, which is one of the things Prabhupada said. He said that not everyone can digest philosophy. But everyone can digest prasadam. So from the very beginning, that's what Prabhupada gave us. He gave us prasadam, and he gave us the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Just little philosophy. And that comes later on as you become purified. Then you can hear more and more. So the topic of prasadam in Prabhupada is also very exciting. Prabhupada himself, as I've been describing to the devotees here, liked prasadam very much. And he would take prasadam 3 times a day. He would take it morning. And his main meal he would take around noontime. According to Ayurveda, when the sun's highest in the sky, that's when your digestion is the best. So Prabhupada followed all these principles just by nature. And then sometimes in the evening, he would take... He would always take hot milk, and he would have so many things, sometimes puffed rice preparations, sometimes puris. One time he came into my room when I was first became his servant, and he said, do you know how to make parathas? I said, no, Prabhupada. So he sat down with me on the floor and showed me how to make parathas. And then every day for the next several days in the evening, he would have parathas. So he showed me very simple paratha, a plain paratha, and it started out with a chapati dough. But instead of sprinkling flour, you just put ghee. You spread ghee on both sides, and then you rolled it, and then you spread ghee on it again, and you put it in half, and you put more ghee on it, and put it in quarters, and just kept rolling, and you had this nice triangular shape thing. And then, of course, you cooked it in a little more ghee. So it was very flaky and very light and would puff up also. But that was how he showed me plain paratha. So, and one evening, It was one of the very nicest evenings. I was describing evening time in Prabhupada's room, because every evening I would get to massage Srila Prabhupada as he laid in bed. And there was no oil involved in that massage. It was just Prabhupada would lie in bed and I would rub his legs, knead his legs and rub his feet and sometimes his back. So that evening was in Juhu, in Bombay. And that evening for prasadam, Prabhupada had puffed rice. Which puffed rice meant it was spicy with achaans. So it was puffed rice with peanuts. And you would make achaans, turmeric and spices and some little salt. So then he would have that with slices of cucumber. And so he had that with hot milk one night. And then after prasadam, about a half hour later, Prabhupada went on to bed, which meant now it was time for me to massage him. So that was the favorite time, my very favorite time of the day, because it was very quiet and peaceful, and no one ever went into Srila Prabhupada's room in the evening time. So it was just his servant got to be with him. So I went in his room, and in Juhu at that time, there was another special treat, because there were a lot of mosquitoes in Bombay and Juhu. So that was a bad thing, but it was also a good thing, because it meant Prabhupada had a mosquito net over his bed. And the reason that was good is, in order to give a massage, I had to sit in the bed with him. So instead of being on the floor moving around, I was actually underneath this net with Prabhupada giving him massage. So to me, you know, I was a young boy, 20 years old, it was like you were camping out with your spiritual master, because you were behind this net and like no one could see anything. It was just you and him in there. So I was rubbing his legs and massaging. It was very hot. Bombay's always hot and a little humid. And Prabhupada just laid there very peacefully, which, again, one of the wonderful things, qualities of Srila Prabhupada, is how peaceful he was. I always liked being around Srila Prabhupada because he was very peaceful. Despite every day he was doing so many things, instructing devotees and preaching and sometimes chastising us and training us. As soon as everyone was gone, like it says, the pure devotee, they just withdraw their senses. Prabhupada was just peaceful and happy. Whether he was chanting japa or doing bhajans or reading his books, or just sitting, if you just saw him sitting, you just felt very peaceful when you were around him, which I enjoyed that air of peacefulness. So in the evening it was like that. You would be in his room and you just felt very safe and very peaceful. So I was massaging him, and Prabhupada just had his eyes closed and he was lying in bed. And as I was massaging, he just started to speak. And when Prabhupada would tell you stories, he didn't just talk and tell you a story. It was like he was living the story, and he would use the voices of all the different people in the story. So it was like a one person play, as he would use different inflections. And so he was lying there and he said, and I'm massaging him, and he said, My mother, she made first-class puffed rice. Because he had just had puffed rice that evening. So he's lying there. And so I very rarely say anything. I'm just massaging. And he said, my mother, she was a first-class cook. He said, and she would make puffed rice. He said, you had a big wok, right? Big, very thick wok. And you would have sand in it. And you would get it very, very hot. Hot, hotter, hotter. And then you would put the rice in, and in the hot, very hot sand, it would puff up. And then when it was all done, you know, you'd stir it and stir it, he said. And then when it was finished, you would just pour it through a sieve, like a screen. And of course, all the sand would fall through. You'd shake it and all the sand, and then you were left with puffed rice. He said she made first-class puffed rice. And then he said, my sister, he said, she was also first-class cook. sister we called Pishima. Her name was Baba Tarini. We always called her Pishima Auntie. He said she was also a first-class cook. He said my mother showed her how to cook. Then he laughed. He said I was also. He said I'm a first-class cook. He said but I just learned by watching. He said I would watch my mother and my sister cook. So he's just describing all these things as he's seeing them go on. And he said when we were young, he said everything was very nice. He said family life was very nice. And he said we weren't a wealthy family. He said my father, he was a cloth merchant. He said but we never had any lack of anything. He said we always had plenty, And he said in the summertime, of course in Calcutta, he said in the summertime there would be so many mangoes. He said, and in our kitchen we would have a basket filled with mangoes. And he said, my sister and I, his sister Pishima, they were always playing together. Him and his sister, they were very, very close. And he said, we would be running around in and out of the house and up on the roof and come back down. And we would run through the kitchen. He said, and then we'd see the mangoes and we'd just grab a mango. We'd eat mangoes. He said, we didn't have to ask, is it okay to have a mango? He said, there were plenty of mangoes. He said, we could just take whatever we wanted. So he was saying there was opulence. He was describing this very simple opulence they had when he was young. And as he's talking, I'm just massaging. And then he said, in the evening, my mother, he said, I would be hungry, so I would ask for puris. He said, sometimes at night, like he did with me. He said, I would ask my mother for puris, and she would say, no, you can't have it. It's too late. Have something else. And Prabhupada, he was always very determined. So he said, no, I have to have puris. And then she would say, no, you can't have puris. So then, he would say, I want puris. He said, then my father would say, if he wants puris, give him puris. And then he said, perhaps my father knew. And that's all he would say. He didn't say what his father. He said, perhaps my father knew. So we could understand that he was talking about his father realizing what a great soul he was from the spiritual world and bring Krishna consciousness to the West. So he said that a few times. He would say, perhaps my father knew. So then he said, when I was a young boy, he said, I had different toys. He said, one of my favorite toys, he said, I had a cow. And attached to the cow, there was a cord with a little ball on the end, like a rubber ball. He said, and you would squeeze it. And he said, and the cow would jump. So he was just there. He was just going back a long, long time. And now he's starting to describe his toys. And he said, and my sister and I, he said, we would fly kites. And he said, I would always make her do the running. Prabhupada said he didn't like running a lot. Prabhupada didn't like running so much. He said, so I would make her run. And then he said, we would pray. I'd say, pray to Krishna, make the kite fly. He said, we would run on the roof and pray to Krishna so that the kite would fly. And then he said, once I was shopping, he said, with my mother, and I saw the guns, he said, toy guns in the store. He said, and I had to have a gun. So, of course, I want a gun. So she would always object a little. He said, I have to have a gun. So she bought him a gun. He said, and then he had the gun, and he's looking. And then he looked at his other hand. And then he started saying, I have to have another gun for this hand. And then she's going, no. And he's there, I have to have a gun. I need a gun for each hand. So she objected. He said, I laid down on the ground and started beating my hands and feet on the ground. And then he said, you see this scar? He said, that's from that time. So Prabhupada threw what we would call a tantrum. So he was always, what Prabhupada wanted, Prabhupada would get, you know. And he was very determined. By our good fortune, Prabhupada was very determined. So then he's just lying there. And he starts saying, he said, when we were young, he said, we would have big festivals. Whenever there was a festival day, he said, everyone in the neighborhood, we would come together. And he said, and all the Matajis, they would all cook something. He said, like potluck. He said, everyone would make something and bring it. He said, not that one person had to do everything. He said, and all the ladies, he said, they're expert cooks. He said, so we had big festivals. And then he said, one of my most favorite things when I was young, he said, were a pair of shoes. He said, when I was very young, I saw some shoes. He said, in the window, he said, they were English shoes. He said, and he said, I wanted them very much. He said, they were 6 rupees. This was like 1902 or something. So 6 rupees was a lot of money. And he said, even though they were so expensive, he said, my father bought me these shoes. He said, they were from England. They were leather shoes, he said. And he said, I like those shoes very much. And he's just lying there this whole time. He's just, but he's going everywhere, Prabhupada, just traveling around. And he just brought you right there. So I'm massaging. And he said, I like those shoes very much. So as this is all going on, I'm trying to imagine, which was very, very hard for me, to try to imagine Prabhupada as, you know, a boy this big and all, doing all these different things. So then I said, Prabhupada, I said, when you wore your shoes, I said, did you used to look at them? He said, because he wore them going to school, he said, every day. I said, did you look at your feet as you were walking to school? He started laughing and laughing. He said, yes, yes. He said, I did. He said, I would walk to school and I would watch my shoes. He said, I like those shoes very much. He said. So this was... Again, this is the other side. This was the side that Jesus didn't show you when he was sitting there on the Vyasasan and taking his morning walks and giving instructions. But Prabhupada was pure devotee of Krishna. And everything he did was delightful, you know, just like that sweet ball. And when you were with him in his room, you just never knew what he might say or what he might do. Once he was on, I was describing Prabhupada on the aeroplane. So that was always very exciting. And this particular day, as I told them, Prabhupada, he always sat at the window. And I would sit right next to him, in the seat next to him. So we would always bring prasadam when we flew. So this time Prabhupada had, which he usually had on the flight, was puris and sabji. It was very simple. And he was sitting down, and we were both eating together. We were having our puris and sabji, and Prabhupada would break off a little puri and take some sabji, and he's taking. And then he started to laugh. And he said, when I was young, he said, I could only eat puris. He said, I could never eat chapatis. Well, Prabhupada ate chapatis every day. That's what he had, was chapatis. He said, but when I was, even as a grahasta, he said, I would only eat puris. He said, I never ate a chapati in my whole life. He said, you couldn't give me a chapati. He said, I had to have puris. And he's laughing. And he said, and sometimes, he said, that was very difficult. He said, because as a grahasta, he said, and was doing business, sometimes you would be invited to people's houses. So he said, and sometimes they would put chapatis in front of me. He said, and I could not eat a chapati. He said, I would not eat a chapati. He said, so it would become very difficult. He said, because they would put chapatis in front of me. Now this is all as we're flying along. And he said, I would get the chapati and I wouldn't know what to do. He say, now if I say, I'm sorry, I don't eat chapatis, he said, then they'll say, oh, you were too good. You won't eat our chapatis. You only eat puri. So he's acting all this out. And I'm just sitting beside him laughing and laughing. And he said it was a big dilemma. He said, because I couldn't eat it. He said, so somehow, he said, I had to do something. He said, but I couldn't offend them. Because when someone gives you something, of course, you have to take. Huh? When you're at someone's house, he said, you have to take what they give you. He said, but I could never eat chapatis. He said, and then later on as a grihastha, I had one servant. And he would always say to me, let me make you chapatis. He said, and I would always refuse. And I'd say, no, I don't eat chapatis. He said, and kept insisting week after week, please let me make you a chapati. I'll make you a chapati so good, he said, that you'll always eat chapatis. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, I do not eat chapatis. I have to have puris. So he said, finally one day I said, okay, make a chapati. He said, and he made me a chapati. He said, and it was so good. He said, and ever since then, he said, now I eat chapatis. But he was very particular about his chapatis, as I said earlier. Chapati had to be first class. It had to puff up very nicely and be very hot. I would bring chapatis to him hot, puffed up little ghee. And sometimes someone would bring him a chapati that didn't puff up, and when it was very hard, Prabhupada would just take it and throw it, you know. And he'd say, that's not a chapati, he would say. So, and for us, he was he always wanted to see. Prabhupada described two kinds of prasadam, opulent and sumptuous. And you can translate opulent and sumptuous. He described opulent prasadam, he said, means ghee and sugar. He said, in the deities, he said, they eat opulent prasadam. Ghee, like at the Sunday feast, that's opulent prasadam. He said, but then there's sumptuous. He said, sumptuous prasadam means it has to be very tasty. And the devotee should always get sumptuous prasadam. He said, it should be so good that you don't even think of going outside to eat. He said, you would only eat prasadam. You would never eat outside of the temple because it's so good. So this was the standard that Prabhupada wanted for his disciples. So when I was with them, one of the things, of course, if you read Prabhupada's books and you hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures, very often he talks about renunciation. And he talks about eating less, sleeping less. And these are the things that we would always learn in ISKCON and early. We would say never sleep more than 6 hours. And you never don't eat too much because trying to control the senses and eating too much mode of passion and all these things. So I was with Prabhupada for a long time, so every day I would sit right there as Prabhupada would give a lecture, and I would be listening to everything he was saying. So one time he was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it was Janmashtami. So we know on Janmashtami we always fast till midnight. So I fasted with the devotees till midnight. And then you break fast. So because you fast all day, your stomach gets a little smaller. So I just ate a little bit of prasadam, and I felt content. So then the next day was Vyas Puja, Prabhupada's Vyas Puja. So again, we fast till noontime. Prabhupada was there. We had a big, big celebration and a big feast. And I looked at all this prasadam in front of me, and I just took a little here and a little there, and I thought, well, I'll try to reduce, because I didn't feel very hungry after fasting half the day. So I just took a little prasadam, and I felt full. So then I go back to my room, and in the afternoon, which always Prabhupada would ring his bell. Every day Prabhupada rang his bell so many times I would go in. So he rang his bell, I went in, I offered obeisances, and I sat up to see what he wanted, and he just looked at me. He said, are you okay? And I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, I'm okay. He said, you said you're not sick? I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, I feel okay. He said, because you look very thin. And he's looking at me. He said, you look thin. And I'm there I said, for the last 2 days, I says, I haven't eaten very much. I said, because we were fasting, I said, didn't feel so hungry. So I reduced my prasadam. And he looked at me. He said, why? He said, you have to massage me every day. He said, you need to eat lots of prasadam, he said. He said, how are you going to have strength if you don't eat prasadam? And I said, I was. He said, you have to eat, he said, as much as you can digest. He said, that's how much prasadam you have to eat. He said, you have to massage me every day. He said, you need lots. He was kept going. He said, you need strength, he said, to massage me. He said, you have to take a lot of prasadam. So that was it. I didn't care. After that, I just would eat whatever I wanted. And then 2 years went by. And now we're in India, in Vrindavan. And we had Janmashtami and we had Vyas Puja. And of course, I couldn't remember what happened 2 weeks ago, much less 2 years ago. So again, I cut down a little bit and I was feeling, you know, inspired and renounced. And then that day, Vyas Puja day, he rings his bell and he does the same thing. And he said, are you all right? And I don't remember. So I'm going, yes, Prabhupada. He said, well, you look very thin. And I said, oh, I'm cutting down eating. And he said the same thing. He said, don't cut down. He said, you eat as much prasadam as you want. He said, you have to have strength, he said. So after that, I never worried about reducing my prasadam until I hit about 45 years old. Then my stomach told me I had to reduce eating my prasadam. So. But it came very naturally. But Prabhupada's program at the Manor, the Manor, George Harrison, you know, he bought Bhaktivedanta Manor for the devotees. And he would come there sometimes and visit Prabhupada. And whenever George Harrison would come, of course, they would make really nice prasadam for, you know, they would make pakoras, cauliflower pakoras, and samosas, and halava, and sweet rice. They would make a feast for him. So he would come in and sit down, and there would be other devotees around. And Prabhupada was always very sweet to him. And he would sit, and then they would bring him prasadam. And right away, George would say, oh, Prabhupada, I ate just a little bit ago. And Prabhupada would say, no, take prasadam, take prasadam. Oh, George would, to satisfy Prabhupada, he would start eating. George was very small fellow, very humble, very nice. So he was taking prasadam. And of course, as soon as he's eating, they're bringing him more prasadam. And George is going, no, Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I'm not hungry. And Prabhupada said, take prasadam. He said, take more prasadam. He said, prasadam can never hurt you. He said, keep taking. So we would make him eat so much. You know. So then when we were at the Manor, this didn't happen much outside of India, but we went to a life member's house one day for prasadam, which was customary in Vedic culture, Indian culture. They would very often, if there was a sannyasi, they would invite over. So this actually became a devotee, initiated devotee of Prabhupada. But he invited Prabhupada and all the devotees to his house for prasadam. So we always liked it. You know, Prabhupada's disciples, any excuse for a feast, we were always ready to take prasadam. So, and I was with Prabhupada, but I heard a rumor, and they said they're cooking in oil. See, we never used oil in the temple. We only used ghee. Everything was cooked in ghee, you know. Everything, the puris were fried in ghee, and the pakoras, and the samosas, and the gulab jamuns, whatever it was, and the chaunces were made with ghee. Because Prabhupada told us that ghee is for the inside, he said, of the body, and oils for the outside of the body, like massage. So we heard that they were cooking in oil, so that meant it was a little dangerous. So all the devotees went. It was about 20 devotees. And actually, that picture's in there. And everyone is sitting down, and Prabhupada's at the head, sitting in a chair, and the two lines of devotees, and we're all eating prasadam, puris, rice, dal, you know, everything nice, halava. And everyone forgot. As soon as we saw the prasadam, we didn't think about oil or ghee, or we just ate prasadam. And after the program was over, we go back to the temple. And Prabhupada's sitting in his room, and Prajumna, myself, Shamasundar, we're in the servants' quarters together sitting there, and I hear the bell ring. So I go in and offer obeisances, and I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And he looks at me, he said, "So," he said, "did everyone have a nice time?" I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And he's looking. And I said, "Oh." And see, Prabhupada always knew. He would call it because he knew things that were going. So, and I didn't. So then I said, "Oh," I said, "well," I said, "Prajumna," I said, "he doesn't feel very well." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, why is that?" I said, "Well," I said, we were told that they were frying everything in ghee." I said, "So Prajumna said his stomach is upset, so he thinks it's because the food was cooked or frying everything in oil. And Prajumna thinks he doesn't feel well because everything was fried in oil." And Prabhupada said, "Hmm." He said, "Prajumna ate 10 puris." And I was thinking, we were just sitting there eating, you know, we didn't think, you know, Prabhupada was watching anything or knew what was going on. But he said, "Prajumna ate 10 puris." And and Prajumna could do things like that. And then I said, "Yes, I guess so, Prabhupada." So then I sat, I said, "Well, Prabhupada," I said, "actually, my stomach feels a little upset also." I said, "But I was very careful," I said, "because I heard they were cooking in oil," I said, "and I hardly ate anything." And Prabhupada looked at me, he said, "Yes." He said, "That's true." He said, "But you did eat 4 puris." And I was like, how did Prabhupada know I ate 4 puris? He knew he ate 10. He knew everything, you know. So we were all just eating, and Prabhupada apparently was just eating, but he knew exactly what was going on, and called me. I had 4 puris, and I did, you know. But he knew it. So one of the nicest things about prasadam was Prabhupada's sister, who we call Pishima. I'll call her Pishima Babatarini. And it was Prabhupada's younger sister, and she was also a wonderful devotee, Vaishnava devotee. And she just loved Prabhupada so much. And when Prabhupada, of course, started returning to India, when I was with him in 72 and 73, he would go to Calcutta. His sister Pishima, she would come and visit Prabhupada because she had natural love for Srila Prabhupada. She just loved him so much. And the first time I saw her, you almost die when you see Pishima because she looked like Prabhupada, only she was shorter and she was a good bit heavier. And of course she wore her widow's sari, like 10 meters of white cloth just around and around and over and around. Bengali style. But she was very nice, and she would bring sweets to the temple. Even she had no money, she would buy sweets at KC Das in Calcutta. Prabhupada said that was the best. You could just buy sweets there and eat them. It was like prasadam. So she would bring sandesh and rasgulla and rasmalai. Oh, so many nice things we would eat. And then she would cook for Prabhupada in the temple in Calcutta. Now again, we never had oil in the temple. We only used ghee. So Pishima, she would bring in a little bottle of mustard oil and she would hide it in her sari because we wouldn't let her use oil for Prabhupada. And she would hide it in her sari, and when no one was looking, she would pour the mustard oil in his vegetables and add it to things because it has lots of flavor. So, and Prabhupada, of course, again, Prabhupada liked shukta and different preparations she would make. So every day I'm cooking for Prabhupada, and Pishima's cooking 3 or 4 different subjis. So we'd bring everything in. So this went on for 2-3 days. And then one day I bring in the prasadam, and I put it down, and Prabhupada looks, and he sees his sister's vegetables. He said, I cannot eat that, he said. He said, my sister, she's trying to kill me. He said, from now on, you eat it. And like I said, I was always sick in India. And I said, I can't eat it. He said, well, do whatever you want with it. He said, but don't bring it in here, because he would eat it. And then he wouldn't feel good. He said, take it. He said, give it away to someone else. He said, but don't bring it to me. He said, I cannot eat her cooking. So I said, yes, Prabhupada. So then I didn't bring in her cooking anymore. So, and one afternoon I'm massaging Prabhupada. And I'm massaging his back with the mustard oil. The same mustard oil that they would put in his food. I'm massaging his back with mustard oil. And Prabhupada says, do you know of any person who is fat without eating? So I started laughing. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, it's not possible to get fat without eating, is it? I said, I don't think so, Prabhupada. He said, no. He said, nor do I. He said, but my sister tells me that she hardly eats anything. He said, but she's so fat. I'm behind him, but he's going like, but she's so fat, he said. He said, and she tells me she's always sick. So I say to her, well, if you're sick, don't eat so much. And then she tells me, I'm not eating. He said, how can you be so fat if you don't eat? And I'm laughing and laughing. And I said, I don't think it's possible. He said, no. He said, I don't think it's possible either. He says, but that's what she says. And she complains about being sick. So I tell her, don't eat so much. And she says, I'm hardly eating. He said, but I don't believe her either. So then we just went on with the massage. I was laughing and laughing. So in the evening, there would be darshans. And in India, Prabhupada was very kind to his disciples, because in India, it was very austere for his Western disciples living in India, and they were very often sick, and they had very difficult places to stay, facilities, bathrooms, everything. It was just difficult. But in India, Prabhupada would just let the devotees come and see him. So many times during the day, he would give darshans, he would give, you know, classes in the morning, but then in the afternoon and evening, everyone who lived in the temple could come in and sit down for darshan. So it was like that in Calcutta. So all the devotees are in Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada's just talking to everyone. So all of a sudden, Pishima, she comes like waddling in, this little Pishima, his sister. And she comes in and she would offer her obeisances to Prabhupada. And then she goes and sits in the corner. Now, she doesn't speak any English, of course. So Prabhupada's just sitting and watching. And Prabhupada, of course, is Vaishnava sannyasi and all, his sister, but he didn't care. So she comes in and everyone's looking. And Prabhupada just kind of stops and she sits down. And then Prabhupada looks, and he looks at his disciples, and he said, just see my sister. He said, just see how fat she is. And everyone just starts laughing. And Pishima's sitting there. And he said, he starts telling everyone what he said. He said, she says she doesn't eat, he said, but she's so fat. And none of the devotees had ever seen Prabhupada in this mood. I had, but this was just something very special, little nectar for them. And so everyone's laughing. And of course, Pishima, she sees everybody laughing, and she's laughing also. So Prabhupada was her older brother, and he had his very special relationship with Pishima. And sometimes devotees don't understand, but Prabhupada was very, very sweet to her. And Pishima's life and soul was Prabhupada. And he once said, me and Pishima, and we had older brothers and sisters in my family. He said, we didn't care about a long life or making any money. He said, we just wanted to be devotees. He said, and my older sisters and brothers, he said, they wanted to make a lot of money and have a very long life. He said, and they all died very young. He said, and Pishima and I, we lived a very long age, he said, and had a very nice life. So he was very connected with Pishima. But he would, sometimes Prabhupada would do these things. So in Pishima, she didn't like me very much. I was the only devotee she didn't like. She liked all the devotees, all Prabhupada's disciples. But because I was Prabhupada's servant, I would sometimes keep her out of Prabhupada's room. She would come and she would just want to walk in. If Prabhupada was resting, I would say, no, Prabhupada's resting. And she'd get very indignant and say, oh, you see Prabhupada? And she would say, Prabhupada. And I say, no, he's resting. And she'd just look at me. She'd walk away. And I thought, oh, man, you know. So I had to offend Pishima, you know. So then later on is 1975. Now, some of the devotee ladies, they're flying Pishima to where Prabhupada is. So now Prabhupada's in Vrindavan at Krishna Balaram Mandir. And he's staying in his rooms. And one day, Pishima went into the room and Prabhupada rang the bell. So I go in and, yes, Prabhupada, he said, sit down. He said, even she's my sister, he said, I can't be alone with her. He said, in Vrindavan, he said, everyone will talk. He said, they're like that in Vrindavan. He said, all the Goswamis will talk that I'm alone with a woman. He said, even she's my sister. He said, you sit here. Whenever she's here, he said, you have to sit here. I said, yes, Prabhupada. And then they would just go on and talk in Bengali. So then one day, give Prabhupada a massage, and then he has his lunch. And I go back to the servants' quarters, to my room. And I had a little bed in there, a little Indian bed, you know, twine. And Pishima's sleeping in my bed, in the servant quarters. So I go in and I see her sleeping there, and I didn't know what to do. So I was Prabhupada's servant. So I just went right back into Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I said, Pishima's sleeping in my bed. He went, ah, he said, my sister. He said, I don't know what to do with her. So he said, okay. He said, I'll take care of it. He said, when she wakes up, he said, call her in. I said, yes, Prabhupada. So Pishima gets up. I said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So she was all happy. Prabhupada wanted to see her. So all she ever wanted to do was see Prabhupada. So he said to me, he said, tell her she can't do that. I said, Prabhupada, I can't tell her anything. I said, first of all, I said, she doesn't like me. I said, and I don't speak Bengali and she doesn't speak English. He said, okay, I'll take care of it, he said. So I bring her in, she sits down, and I'm sitting on the sides because I have to be in the room. And they're talking back and forth and back and forth. And then she gets up and she leaves. And Prabhupada looks at me, he said, it's all taken care of. He said, it won't happen again. I said, thank you, Prabhupada. So the very next day, of course, I go into my room and there she is, this little chubby lady. She's lying on my bed, sound asleep. And I just went, I just went outside and chanted, didn't worry about it anymore. And in the final days, Prabhupada even made apologies to his sister. He said, sometimes I've made some offense to my sister, he said. When he was in his final days before he left, as he was offered, asked for relief from offenses to his god brothers for saying things in his preaching. But even his sister, he said that. If I've offended you, my sister, he said, I'm sorry. So he was very sweet. So since we're talking about prasadam, and we can end with this and then see if there's any questions. But this is a very special prasadam story. And this took place in Atlanta. In Atlanta Temple, Prabhupada had his quarters there. And the whole day was very special. In Atlanta, Prabhupada went into ecstasy on the Vyasasan. He gave a lecture. It was the shortest lecture Prabhupada ever gave. It was three sentences. And he was looking at Gaur Nitai on the altar, and he just couldn't speak anymore, and he just started crying, and tears were just coming out of his eyes, and he just closed his eyes. He did it a few times, and he just closed his eyes, and everyone would just sit very quietly. No one would do anything, not chant japa, not hardly breathe. And then finally he would open his eyes and he'd say, chant Hare Krishna. So then the whole day went by. So again at nighttime, I get to massage Prabhupada in his room. So he was only there in Atlanta for 3 days in this house. And they still have this house. This is one of the Prabhupada memorial houses that they have in the West. Prabhupada spent 3 days and they have everything just like when he stayed there. And if you go into his room, you'll see Prabhupada was lying in bed and I was massaging his legs, rubbing his feet, and pulling his toes. And then Prabhupada was just lying back, relaxed, very relaxed. And on the opposite wall from his bed, there was a big painting. And it was Krishna and Balaram, and the cowherd boys, and calves. You know, you just see calves, hundreds of calves, hundreds of cowherd boys. And Prabhupada was just looking at this picture as I was massaging him. And then he said, I like the cowherd boys very much. So then I just keep massaging them. You know? And then he's looking at, and he said, every day, he said, Krishna and Balaram, he said they would go into the forest of Vrindavan with all their friends to herd the calves. He said, and before they would go, he said, Krishna's mother, Jasoda, she would make a nice tiffin for Krishna. And in the tiffin, there'd be kachuri, lagdu, puris. He said, and all the cowherd boys, their mothers, they would also make tiffins. He said, but their tiffins had rice, dal, chapatis, like that. You know, it wasn't so opulent. He said, then they would all go into the forest and play all day, he said. He said then sometimes, he said, the cowherd boys, they'd steal Krishna's tiffin and they'd play keep away from Krishna with this tiffin. And he'd throw it here and throw it there. And he said, and then finally, they'd give Krishna one of their tiffins and they would all go off and sit down and they would open up Krishna's tiffin and they would eat kachuri and lagdu. He said, and Krishna, he would eat rice, dal, and chapatis from one of the other Matajis. And then he just looked at me and he said, I just want to go back to the spiritual world and eat kachuri and lagdu with Krishna. And then he just closed his eyes and I just kept massaging. So that's my favorite prasadam story in Prabhupada. So he could just never knew when Prabhupada was sitting in that, in those moods, in his little ecstatic moods. So I don't want to go on too long. If anyone has any questions about anything? Yes. As his servant, 2.5 years, from September of 1972. Mm-hmm. And I went around the world with him 5 times. So that's why it was kind of a surprise that I was never in Germany anywhere in those 2.5 years, but I wasn't, so. No questions? Ah, well, all these things are there. This, it's available. I have maybe 10 copies with me. If anyone wants it, it's many devotees are very fond of it. And both Satsup Maharaj and Shivaram Swami said it's the nicest book about Prabhupada. It's very personal. It's not so much facts and figures and a diary as much as just like these stories I were telling. So if anyone would like it and I would also sign it for it's 20 euros. I brought as many as I could on Ryanair. You don't get much luggage on Ryanair. So if you're interested, it's an opportunity to get it. Who's reading it? So you can say something if you like. Mataji, you're reading it? No, you can eat, yes. You can just offer it and eat it. Yeah, yeah. That's okay. We have to, Prabhupada would always say, do the needful. You know? He had so many nice sayings, you know. He said, we'd say, Krishna consciousness is common sense. So, we see, you know, one is advanced, of course, everything is Krishna's prasadam, you know. But, you know, not that we should do that, take that cheaply, but yeah, in any situation we have to do what's necessary to keep. Most important thing, when, you know, Prabhupada wrote rules and regulations, and at the very top, do you know what he put? Anyone know? No, he put health was the most important thing. And under health, he put chant 16 rounds. So Prabhupada always emphasized, have to chant 16 rounds every day. But if you're not healthy, you don't do anything. So Prabhupada spent a lot of time every day on his health. We were talking about this morning, he said three things. He said, keep me alive. And that was his massage and his morning walk, which he did every day for, you know, 1 to 2 hours. Prabhupada would take a very fast walk. And the third thing was his Ayurvedic medicine. He didn't take Western medicine. And he didn't take so much Ayurvedic medicine, but he took one tonic every other morning. It was just this little small pills. It was called Jagendra Ras. And that was prescribed by an Ayurvedic physician. And in it was some crushed pearl, supposedly, and little gold dust, like gold leaf, was mixed in. So it was very special. But these things, in minute quantity, are very, they rejuvenate, you know. So Prabhupada wanted to be here as long as he could. He didn't want to get out quickly. He saw that he had a mission, you know. And we all have a mission to use this body to serve Krishna. So whatever is best, you know, in order to serve Krishna, we have to do that. So yeah, that's no problem. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Oh, the title of the book. Yes. What is the difficulty? again, I could never think. It took me a long time to write this book because I'm not a writer, and writing about Srila Prabhupada is not the easiest thing to do. But somehow, by Prabhupada's mercy and different devotees who helped me, it happened. But I could never think of a title for the book. So just before it went to printing, I decided on this title, which it's a saying Prabhupada would say so many times. He would say, and it's not so much, it's not a very hard, what is the difficulty? It's not like an angry question. Prabhupada would sometimes say this, Krishna consciousness is so nice. He would say, what is the difficulty? We chant, right? We take prasadam, we dance, You'd say, what is the difficulty? So it has very many different meanings. But the reason it's here is, I first met Prabhupada when I was initiated by him, first initiation. And it was in New York Temple, and I had been a devotee in the temple in New Vrindavan for 3 months. So we drove a van, half a dozen of us. We went from New Vrindavan to New York City to Brooklyn Temple. And there every day Prabhupada initiated 10 devotees. This is how things were going at that time. Every day 10 devotees. So we get to the temple and we're there, and Prabhupada arrives from the airport. We didn't go. And it was summertime. It was very hot. And I was Kirtanananda's. It was Prabhupada's first disciple, Prabhupada's first sannyasi, and I was his servant. So because I was with Kirtanananda, I got to be right by the Vyasasan. And Prabhupada's Vyasasan was only this high. It wasn't so high. It was like this. And it was in the center of the back of the room. And the temple room was packed with hundreds of devotees. But I got to be right there because Kirtanananda Swami was right here, so I stood beside him. And even though I was just this young bhakta, because usually it went out, you know, the people who were the oldest devotees and most senior, they were the closest to Prabhupada all the time. And then it went out from there. But I was right here next to Prabhupada, even the first day I saw him. So the temple room's packed with devotees and everyone's chanting and dancing and sweating because it was like 100 degrees in the temple room. And then the kirtan stopped and Prabhupada started saying the mantras. And Jai Om Vishnu Pad. So everybody's down, all offering obeisances. So now the temple room just became overly packed because instead of standing up, now we take up twice as much room. We're all down on our hands and knees. So everyone was squeezed together. And I was right there and I'm squeezed down and I'm offering obeisances to Prabhupada. And I said it very fast, because I just wanted to look at Prabhupada. I just wanted to see Prabhupada's beautiful face, you know. So I Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Padaya. And then I sat up to look at Prabhupada. But around me, everyone was still bowing down. So when I sat on a brahmachari's head. He was right behind me. So I sat on his head. So he became disturbed. And he pushed his head up. And when he pushed his head up, I fell. And I fell right across Prabhupada's Vyasasan. And my hands were like right over his feet and legs. And I was just lying right here. And Prabhupada said, what is the difficulty? So I just shrunk back to my seat like that. And so that's why the book is called, What is the Difficulty? But everyone, when you read the book, because he said it to me actually many times, and it was the very first instruction I got from Prabhupada was, and I never saw Prabhupada the rest of my life, that instruction would have been enough for me to meditate on, had to become Krishna conscious. But for me, it was just the beginning. And then, in 1975, I left Prabhupada for 8 months, and had gotten married, and I had a son. It's all a long story. And then I went back as Prabhupada's servant. And then Prabhupada went to Hawaii, which happened to be where my wife and son were at the time. So I brought my son to see Prabhupada, and he's in the Hawaii temple, beautiful place. And Prabhupada's sitting up on this balcony over the carport. It was a balcony. And he would take the son. It was so nice in Hawaii. And he was sitting in a rocking chair. So I brought my son to see him. And my son was 6 months old. So he was like this big. And Prabhupada's sitting there. I come in and carry him in. And he can hardly walk. You know, he's just like, he's starting to walk. So Prabhupada's sitting there. So I put my son down. So he just starts walking right over to Prabhupada. And right before he gets to him, he fell. And he fell right on the Prabhupada's lap, just like his father. And he grabbed his feet when he fell. And Prabhupada looked at him and he smiled. He said, ah, he said, the beginning of his devotional service. But he did the same thing that I did when I first met Prabhupada. So Prabhupada named him when he was born. He named him Mayapur Chandra. He was the very first devotee in ISKCON to get this name, Mayapur Chandra. He was born, it was October 6, 1974. And the temple was not even called Mayapur Chandra Doya Mandir at that point. They didn't know what they were going to name the temple. And I had gotten a telegram, and my son was born in Los Angeles at 4:15 a.m. It's at 4:15. And 4:15 a.m. is what time Mangalartik starts in Mayapur. No other temple does Mangalartik start at 4:15 except for Mayapur. So he was born at 4:15 a.m. So we get the telegram the next day. And of course I ran right into Prabhupada and said, oh, Prabhupada, I said, you know, so my wife had a son. So I was very happy. And Prabhupada said, oh, very good, he said. And then he said, so, he said, you can call your son Mayapur Chandra. And then he laughed. He said, you won't find that name anywhere. He said, you'll find Navadweep Chandra. He said, in the Shastra and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, you'll find Navadweep Chandra, Nader Nimai, Nimai Pandit. He said, but you won't find Mayapur Chandra anywhere. He said, I've made it up. So that became his name. And then he said to me, get my white bag. Prabhupada's white bag. That was like his briefcase. You know, briefcase. And in it, he would have his passport and different bank books for BBT, and his Guru Dakshin would be in there. Important papers would be in there. So he said, get my white bag. So I went in, and he had a locking Elmira. He always had an Elmira in every room around the world where he could lock me. So I got it, and I put it down in front of him. And we're just sitting there. And Prabhupada, everything he did, he just looked so nice, you know. And he grabbed him very slowly, just opened the zipper. And he took some Lakshmi. He took some rupees out of it. And he said, called one of the Bengali brahmacharis. So I came in, and he gave him the money. He said, go to Navadweep. He said, you buy silver bangles and ankle bells, he said, for Srutakirti's son, Mayapur Chandra. So he bought him, his very first gift came from Prabhupada. So this is what it was like to serve Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't that you just thought you're just working and hoping for Krishna's mercy someday. Prabhupada reciprocated all the time with us. Was always, and then you just wanted to do more for him. I mean, I was amazed. He had these little silver bangles and got a special name. And so then months later, we went to Los Angeles. Now, and his past servant, who was his servant before me, he was there. And he had a son. And that guy had a son. So this was like 6 months later. And Prabhupada said, go get Nanda Kumar, who had been his servant. So I had to go into New Dwarka community. It was a big community. And I find Nanda Kumar, and we both go back. And we offer obeisances. And again, Prabhupada says, get my white bag. So I'm thinking, oh, geez. I get his white bag and puts it on his desk and opens it up. And he takes out a $50 bill. This is 1973. He takes out a $50 bill and he hands it to me. He said, this is for your son. And I learned with Prabhupada early on, when Prabhupada wanted to do something, the best thing you could do was just accept it. And I didn't mind accepting things from Prabhupada. I felt wonderful when Prabhupada wanted to give me something. I didn't think it was a bad thing. So I said, thank you, Prabhupada, and I took it. And then he took out another one, and he goes to Nanda Kumar. He said, this is for your son. And Nanda Kumar said, Prabhupada, I can't take that. And Prabhupada said, it's not for you, it's for your son. And Nanda Kumar was, yes, Prabhupada, he just took it. You know? So he always knew what to say, always knew how to do it, just cut through everything. You know, he could cut through all that false ego and all your false conceptions, and we just know what you had to do. So, anything else? So we should stop here then, I guess.